Rashik moved the Well of Ascension, obviously. It was very clever of him, perhaps the cleverest thing he did. He knew that the power would one day return to the Well, for power such as this, the fundamental power by which the world itself was formed, does not simply run out. It can be used, and therefore diffused, but it will always be renewed. So, knowing that rumors and tales would persist, Rashik changed the very landscape of the world. He put mountains in what became the north, and named that location Terrace. Then he flattened his true homeland, and built his capital there. He constructed his palace around that room at its heart, the room where he would meditate, the room that was a replica of his old hovel in Terrace, a refuge created during the last moments before his power ran out. 12. "I'm worried about him, Elland," Vin said, sitting on their bedroll.
"Who?" Elland asked, looking away from the mirror. "Sazed?"
Vin nodded. When Elland awoke from their nap, she was already up, bathed, and dressed. He worried about her sometimes, working herself as hard as she did. He worried even more now that he too was mistborn, and understood the limitations of pewter. The metal strengthened the body, letting one postpone fatigue, but at a price. When the pewter ran out or was turned off, the fatigue returned, crashing down on you like a collapsing wall. Yet Vin kept going. Elland was burning pewter too, pushing himself, but she seemed to sleep half as much as he did. She was harder than he was, strong in ways he would never know.
"Sazed will deal with his problems," Elland said, turning back to his dressing. "He must have lost people before."
"This is different," Vin said. He could see her in the reflection, sitting cross-legged behind him in her simple clothing. Elland's stark white uniform was just the opposite. It shone with its gold-painted wooden buttons, intentionally crafted with too little metal in them to be affected by allomancy. The clothing itself had been made with a special cloth that was easier to scrub clean of ash. Sometimes he felt guilty at all the work it took to make him look regal. Yet it was necessary. Not for his vanity, but for his image. The image for which his men marched to war. In a land of black, Elland wore white, and became a symbol.
"Different?" Elland asked, doing up the buttons on his jacket sleeves. "What is different about Tyndall's death? She fell during the assault on Lúthedain. So did Clubs and Doxen. You killed my own father in that battle, and I beheaded my best friend shortly before it. We've all lost people."
"He said something like that himself," Vin said. "But it's more than just one death to him. I think he sees a kind of betrayal in Tyndall's death. He always was the only one of us who had faith. He lost that when she died somehow."
"The only one of us who had faith?" Elland asked, plucking a wooden silver-painted pin off his desk and affixing it to his jacket. "What about this?"
"You belong to the Church of the Survivor, Elland," Vin said. "But you don't have faith. Not like Sazed did. It was like he knew everything would turn out all right. He trusted that something was watching over the world."
"He'll deal with it."
"It's not just him, Elland," Vin said. "Breeze tries too hard."
"What does that mean?" Elland asked with amusement.
"He pushes on everyone's emotions," Vin said. "He pushes too hard, trying to make others happy, and he laughs too hard. He's afraid, worried. He shows it by overcompensating."
Elland smiled. "You're getting as bad as he is, reading everybody's emotions and telling them how they're feeling."
"They're my friends, Elland," Vin said. "I know them. And I'm telling you, they're giving up. One by one, they're beginning to think we can't win this one."
Elland fastened the final button, then looked at himself in the mirror. Sometimes he still wondered if he fit the ornate suit, with its crisp whiteness and implied regality. He looked into his own eyes, looking past the short beard, warrior's body, and scarred skin. He looked into those eyes, searching for the king behind them. As always, he wasn't completely impressed with what he saw. He carried on anyway, for he was the best they had. Tyndall had taught him that. "Very well," he said. "I trust that you're right about the others. I'll do something to fix it." That, after all, was his job. The title of Emperor carried with it only a single duty: to make everything better. "All right," Elland said, pointing to a map of the Empire hanging on the wall of the conference tent. "We timed the arrival and disappearance of the mists each day, then Nourdin and his scribes analyzed them. They've given us these perimeters as a guide." The group leaned in, studying the map. Vin sat at the back of the tent, as was still her preference. Closer to the shadows. Closer to the exit. She'd grown more confident, true, but that didn't make her careless. She liked to be able to keep an eye on everyone in the room, even if she did trust them. And she did. Except maybe Set. The obstinate man sat at the front of the group, his quiet teenage son at his side, as always. Set, or King Set, one of the monarchs who had sworn allegiance to Elland, had an unfashionable beard, an even more unfashionable mouth, and two legs that didn't work. That hadn't kept him from nearly conquering Luthadel over a year before.
"Hell," Set said. "You expect us to be able to read that thing?"
Elland tapped the map with his finger. It was a rough sketch of the Empire, similar to the one they'd found in the cavern, only more up to date. It had several large concentric circles inscribed on it.
"The outermost circle is the place where the mists have completely taken the land, and no longer leave at all during the daylight."
Elland moved his finger inward to another circle.
"This circle passes through the village we just visited, where we found the cache. This marks 4 hours of daylight. Everything inside the circle gets more than 4 hours. Everything outside of it gets less."
"And the final circle?" Breeze asked.
He sat with Alrianne as far away from Set as the tent would allow. Set still had a habit of throwing things at Breeze, insults for the most part, and occasionally knives. Elland eyed the map.
"Assuming the mists keep creeping toward Luthadel at the same rate, that circle represents the area that the scribes feel will get enough sunlight this summer to support crops."
The room fell silent. "Hope is for the foolish," Rean's voice seemed to whisper in the back of Vin's mind. She shook her head. Her brother, Rean, had trained her in the ways of the street and the underground, teaching her to be mistrustful and paranoid. In doing so, he'd also taught her to survive. It had taken Kelsier to show her that it was possible to both trust and survive, and it had been a hard lesson. Even so, she still often heard Rean's phantom voice in the back of her mind, more a memory than anything else, whispering her insecurities, bringing back the brutal things he had taught her.
"That's a fairly small circle, El," Ham said, still studying the map.
The large-muscled man sat with General Demu between Set and Breeze. Sazed sat quietly to the side. Vin glanced at him, trying to judge if her previous conversation had lifted his depression any, but she couldn't tell. They were a small group, only 9, if one counted Set's son, Njordan. But it included pretty much all that was left of Kelsier's crew. Only Spook, doing reconnaissance in the north, was missing. Everyone was focused on the map. The final circle was, indeed, very small, not even as big as the central dominance, which held the imperial city of Luthadel. What the map said, and Elland implied, was that over 90% of the Empire wouldn't be able to support crops this summer.
Even this small bubble will be gone by next winter, Elland said.
Vin watched the others contemplate and realize, if they hadn't already, the horror of what was upon them.
It's like Elendi's logbook said, she thought. They couldn't fight the deepness with armies. It destroyed cities, bringing a slow, terrible death. They were helpless.
The deepness. That was what they'd called the mists. Or at least, that was what the surviving records called them. Perhaps the thing they fought, the primal force Vin had released, was behind the obfuscation. There was really no way of knowing for sure what had once been, for the entity had the power to change records.
All right, people, Elland said, folding his arms. We need options. Kelsier recruited you because you could do the impossible. Well, our predicament is pretty impossible.
He didn't recruit me, Set pointed out. I got pulled by my balls into this little fiasco.
I wish I cared enough to apologize, Elland said, staring at them.
Come on. I know you have thoughts.
Well, my dear man, Breeze said, the most obvious option appears to be the Well of Ascension. It seems the power there was built to fight the mists.
Or to free the thing hiding in them, Set said.
That doesn't matter, Vin said, causing heads to turn. There's no power at the well. It's gone. Used up. If it ever returns, it will be in another 1,000 years, I suspect.
That's a little bit long to stretch the supplies in those storage caches, Elland said.
What if we grew plants that need very little light? Ham asked.
As always, he wore simple trousers and a vest. He was a thug and could burn pewter, which made him resistant to heat and cold. He'd cheerfully walk around sleeveless on a day that would send most men running for shelter. Well, maybe not cheerfully. Ham hadn't changed overnight, as Sazed had. Ham, however, had lost some of his joviality. He tended to sit around a lot, looks of consternation on his face, as if he were considering things very, very carefully, and not much liking the answers he came up with.
"There are plants that don't need light?" Aurianne asked, cocking her head.
"Mushrooms and the like," Ham said. "I doubt we could feed an entire empire on mushrooms," Elland said, though it's a good thought.
"There have to be other plants, too," Ham said. "Even if the mists come all day, there will be some light that gets through. Some plants have to be able to live on that."
"Plants we can't eat, my dear man," Breeze pointed out.
"Yes, but maybe animals can," Ham said.
Elland nodded thoughtfully.
"Blasted little time left for horticulture," Set noted. "We should have been working on this sort of thing years ago."
"We didn't know most of this until a few months ago," Ham said.
"True," Elland said, "but the Lord Ruler had 1,000 years to prepare. That's why he made the storage caverns, and we still don't know what the last one contains."
"I don't like relying on the Lord Ruler, Elland,"
Breeze said with a shake of his head.
"He must have prepared those caches knowing that he'd be dead if anyone ever had to use them."
Set nodded.
"The idiot soother has a point. If I were the Lord Ruler, I'd have stuffed those caches with poisoned food and pissed in water. If I were dead, then everyone else ought to be as well."
"Fortunately, Set," Elland said with a raised eyebrow, "the Lord Ruler has proven more altruistic than we might have expected."
"Not something I ever thought I'd hear," Ham noted.
"He was Emperor," Elland said. "We may not have liked his rule, but I can understand him somewhat. He wasn't spiteful. He wasn't even evil, exactly. He just got carried away. Besides, he resisted this thing that we're fighting."
"This thing?" Set asked. "The mists?"
"No," Elland said. "The thing that was trapped in the Well of Ascension."
"It is called ruin," Vin thought suddenly. "It will destroy everything."
This is why I've decided we need to secure that last cache, Ellen said. The Lord Ruler lived through this once. He knew how to prepare. Perhaps we'll find plants that can grow without sunlight. Each of the caches so far has had repeats, food stores, water. But each one has held something new as well. In Vatitan, we found large stores of the first 8 Alantic metals. The thing in that last cache might be just what we need in order to survive.
That's it, then, Set said, smiling broadly through his beard. We are marching on Fadrix, aren't we?
Ellen nodded curtly.
Yes. The main force of the army will march for the western dominance once we break camp here.
Ha! Set said. Penrod and Janarl can suck on that for a few days.
Vin smiled faintly.
Penrod and Janarl were the two other most important kings under Ellen's imperial rule. Penrod governed Luthadel, which was why he wasn't with them currently. And Janarl ruled the Northern Dominance, the kingdom that included House Venture's hereditary lands. The largest city in the north, however, had been seized in a revolt, while Janarl, with Ellen's father, Straff Venture, had been away laying siege to Luthadel. So far, Ellen hadn't been able to spare troops necessary to take Urto back from its dissidents, so Janarl ruled in exile, his smaller force of troops used to maintain order in the cities he did control. Both Janarl and Penrod had made a point of finding reasons to keep the main army from marching on Set's homeland.
"Those bastards won't be at all happy when they hear about this," Set said.
Ellen shook his head.
"Does everything you say have to contain one vulgarity or another?"
Set shrugged.
"What's the point of speaking if you can't say something interesting?"
"Swearing isn't interesting," Ellen said.
"That's your own damned opinion," Set said, smiling. "And you really shouldn't be complaining, Emperor. If you think the things I say are vulgar, you've been living in Luthadel far too long. Where I come from, people are embarrassed to use pretty words like damn."
Ellen sighed.
"Anyway, I..."
He was cut off as the ground began to shake. Vin was on her feet in seconds, looking for danger as the others cursed and reached for stability. She threw back the tent flap, peering through the mists. Yet the shaking subsided quickly, and it caused very little chaos in the camp, all things considered. Patrols moved about, checking for problems, officers and allomancers under Ellen's command. Most of the soldiers, however, just remained in their tents. Vin turned back toward the tent's room. A few of the chairs had fallen over, travel furniture disturbed by the earthquake. The others slowly returned to their seats.
"Sure have been a lot of those lately," Ham said.
Vin met Ellen's eyes and could see concern in them.
"We can fight armies, we can capture cities, but what of ash, mists, and earthquakes? What about the world falling apart around us?"
"Anyway," Ellen said, voice firm despite the concerns Vin knew he must feel, "Fadrix has to be our next goal. We can't risk missing the cache and the things it might contain."
"Like the Atium," Reen whispered in Vin's head as she sat back down.
"Atium," she said out loud. Set perked up. "You think it'll be there?"
"There are theories," Ellen said, eyeing Vin, "but we have no proof."
"It will be there," she said.
"It has to be. I don't know why, but we have to have it."
"I hope it isn't," Set said. "I marched halfway across the blasted empire to try and steal that Atium. If it turns out I left it beneath my own city."
"I think we're missing something important, El," Ham said. "Are you talking about conquering Fadrix City?"
The room fell still. Up until this point, Ellen's armies had been used defensively, attacking Kolos garrisons or the camps of small warlords and bandits. They had bullied a few cities into joining with him, but they had never actually assaulted a city and taken it by force. Ellen turned, looking back toward the map. Even from the side, Vin could see his eyes. the eyes of a man hardened by 2 years of near-perpetual war.
"Our primary goal will be to take the city by diplomacy," Elland said.
"Diplomacy," Set said. "Fadrix is mine. That damn obligator stole it from me. There's no need to worry your conscience about attacking him, Elland."
"No need?" Elland asked, turning.
"Set, those are your people, your soldiers, we'd have to kill to get into that city."
"People die in war," Set said. "Feeling bad about it doesn't remove the blood from your hands, so why bother? Those soldiers turned against me. They deserve what they'll get."
"It's not that simple," Ham said. "If there was no way for the soldiers to fight this usurper, then why expect them to give up their lives?"
"Especially for a man who was himself a usurper," Elland said.
"Either way," Ham said, "reports describe that city as being very well defended. It will be a tough stone to break, El."
Elland stood quietly for a moment, then eyed Set, who still looked inordinately pleased with himself. The two seemed to share something, an understanding. Elland was a master of theory and had probably read as much on war as anyone. Set seemed to have a sixth sense for war and tactics, and had replaced clubs as the Empire's prime military strategist.
"Siege," Set said.
Elland nodded.
"If King Yeoman won't respond to diplomacy, then the only way we'll get in that city, short of killing half our men breaking in, is by besieging it and making him desperate."
"Do we have time for that?"
Ham asked, frowning.
"Besides Urto," Elland said, "Fadrix City and the surrounding areas are the only major sections of the Inner Dominances that maintain a strong enough force to be threatening. That, plus the cash, means we can't afford to simply leave them alone."
"Time is on our side, in a way," Set said, scratching his beard. "You don't just attack a city like Fadrix, Ham. It has fortifications, one of the few cities besides Luthadel that could repel an army. But since it's outside the central dominance, it's probably already hurting for food."
Elland nodded.
"Well, we have all the supplies we found in the storage caches. If we block off the highway, then hold the canal, they'll have to surrender the city eventually. Even if they've found the cash, which I doubt, we will be able to outlast them."
Ham frowned.
"I guess."
"Besides," Elland added, "if things get tough, we do have about 20,000 kolos we can draw upon."
Ham raised an eyebrow, though said nothing. The implication was clear. You'd turn Kolos against other people?
"There is another element to this," Sazed said softly. "Something we have, as of yet, not discussed."
Several people turned, as if they'd forgotten he was there.
"The mists," Sazed said. "Fadrix City lies well beyond the mist perimeter, Emperor Venture. Will you subject your army to 15% casualties before you even arrive at the city?"
Elland fell quiet. So far, he'd managed to keep most of his soldiers out of the mists. It seemed wrong to Vin that their army had been protected from the sickness, while the villagers had been forced to go out in the mists. And yet, where they camped, there was still a significant amount of mistless daylight, and they also had enough tents to hold all of the soldiers, something they'd lacked when moving the villagers. Mists rarely went into buildings, even cloth ones. There had been no reason to risk killing some of the soldiers, since they'd been able to avoid it. It seemed hypocritical to Vin, but so far it still made sense. Elland met Sazed's eyes.
"You make a good point," he said. "We can't protect the soldiers from this forever. I forced the villagers of a titan to immunize themselves. I suspect that I will have to make the army do the same, for the same reasons."
Vin sat back quietly. She often wished for the days when she'd had nothing to do with such decisions, or better yet, when Elland hadn't been forced to make them.
"We march for Fadrix," Elland said again, turning from the group.
He pointed at the map.
If we're going to pull through this, and by we I mean all the people of the new empire, we're going to need to band together and concentrate our populations near the central dominance. It will be the only place that can grow food this summer, and we'll need every bit of manpower we can muster to clear ash and prepare the fields. That means bringing the people of Fadrix under our protection. That also means, he said, pointing toward the northeastern section of the map, that we'll need to suppress the rebellion in Urto. Not only does the city there contain a storage cache, with grain we desperately need for a second planting down in the central dominance, but the city's new rulers are gathering strength and an army. Urto is well within staging distance of Luthadel, as we discovered back when my father marched on us. I will not have a repeat of that event.
We don't have enough troops to march on both fronts at once, El, Ham said.
Ellen nodded.
I know. In fact, I'd rather avoid marching on Urto. That was my father's seat. The people there had good reason to rebel against him.
Dimmu, report.
Dimmu stood.
We had a steel-inscribed message from Spook while Your Majesty was away, he said. The lad says that the faction controlling Urto is made up of Ska rebels.
That sounds promising, Breeze noted. Our kind of people.
They're quite harsh with noblemen, Lord Breeze, Dimmu said. And they include anyone with noble parents in that group.
A little extreme, I'd think, Ham said.
A lot of people thought Kelsier was extreme, too, Breeze said. I'm certain we can talk reason into these rebels.
Good, Ellen said, because I'm counting on you and Sazed to bring Urto under our control without the use of force. There are only 5 of these caches, and we can't afford to lose one. Who knows what we'll eventually discover in Fadrix? It might require us to return to the other caches to find something we missed. He turned, looking at Breeze, then Sazed.
We can't just sneak the food out of Urto, he said. If the rebellion in that city spreads, it could cause the entire empire to fracture back into splinters. We have to bring the men there to our side.
The members of the room nodded, as did Vin. They knew, from personal experience, how much power a small rebellion could exert on an empire.
The Fadrix siege could take some time, Ellen said. Long before summer arrives, I want you to have secured that northern cache and subdued the rebellion. Send the seed stock down to the central dominance for planting.
Don't worry, Breeze said. I've seen the kinds of governments Ska set up. By the time we get there, the city will probably be on the edge of collapse anyway. Why, they'll likely be relieved to get an offer to join the new empire.
Be wary, Ellen said. Spook's reports have been sparse, but it sounds as if tensions in the city are extreme. We'll send a few 100 soldiers with you as protection.
He looked back at the map, eyes narrowing slightly.
5 caches, 5 cities. Urto is part of all this somehow. We can't afford to let it slip away.
Your Majesty, Sazed said, is my presence required on that trip?
Ellen frowned, glancing back at Sazed.
You have something else you need to be doing, Sazed?
I have research I would do, the Keeper said.
I respect your wishes, as always, Ellen said. If you think this research is important...
It's of a personal nature, Your Majesty, Sazed said.
Could you do it while helping in Urto? Ellen asked. You're a Terrasman, which lends you a credibility none of us can claim. Beyond that, people respect and trust you, Sazed. With good reason. Breeze, on the other hand, has something of a... reputation.
I worked hard for it, you know, Breeze said.
I'd really like to have you lead that team, Sazed, Ellen said. I can't think of a better ambassador than the Holy Witness himself.
Sazed's expression was unreadable.
Very well, he finally said. I shall do my best.
Good, Ellen said,
turning to regard the rest of the group.
Then there's one last thing I need to ask of you all.
And what is that? Set asked.
Elland stood for a few moments, looking over their heads, appearing thoughtful.
I want you to tell me about the survivor, he finally said.
He was Lord of the Mists, Demu said immediately.
Not the rhetoric, Elland said. Someone tell me about the man, Kelsier. I never met him, you know. I saw him once, right before he died, but I never knew him.
What's the point? Set asked. We've all heard the stories. He's practically a god if you listen to the ska.
Just do as I ask, Elland said.
The tent was still for a few moments. Finally, Ham spoke.
Kel was, grand. He wasn't just a man. He was bigger than that. Everything he did was large. His dreams, the way he spoke, the way he thought.
And it wasn't false, Breeze added. I can tell when a man is being fake. That's why I started my first job with Kelsier, actually. Amidst all the pretenders and posturers, he was genuine. Everyone wanted to be the best. Kelsier really was.
He was a man, Vin said quietly. Just a man. Yet you always knew he'd succeed. He made you be what he wanted you to be.
So he could use you, Breeze said.
But you were better when he was done with you, Ham added.
Elland nodded slowly.
I wish I could have known him. Early in my career, I always compared myself to him. By the time I heard of Kelsier, he was already becoming a legend. It was unfair to force myself to try and be him, but I worried regardless. Anyway, those of you who knew him, maybe you can answer another question for me. What do you think he'd say if he saw us now?
He'd be proud, Ham said immediately. I mean, we defeated the Lord Ruler, and we built a ska government.
What if he saw us at this conference? Elland said.
The tent fell still again. When someone spoke what they were all thinking, it came from a source Vin hadn't expected.
He'd tell us to laugh more, Sazed whispered.
Breeze chuckled.
He was completely insane, you know. The worse things got, the more he'd joke. I remember how chipper he was the very day after one of our worst defeats, when we lost most of our ska army to that fool Yeadon. Kel walked in, a spring in his step, making one of his inane jokes.
Sounds insensitive, Aurianne said.
Ham shook his head.
No, he was just determined. He always said that laughter was something the Lord Ruler couldn't take from him. He planned and executed the overthrow of a thousand-year empire, and he did it as a kind of penance for letting his wife die thinking that he hated her. But he did it all with a smirk on his lips, like every joke was his way of slapping fate in the face.
We need what he had, Elland said.
The room's eyes turned back toward him.
We can't keep doing this, Elland said. We bicker amongst ourselves, we mope about, watching the ash fall, convinced that we're doomed.
Breeze chuckled.
I don't know if you noticed the earthquake a few minutes ago, my dear man, but the world appears to be ending. That is an indisputably depressing event.
Elland shook his head.
We can survive this, but the only way that will happen is if our people don't give up. They need leaders who laugh, leaders who feel that this fight can be won. So this is what I ask of you. I don't care if you're an optimist or a pessimist. I don't care if secretly you think we'll all be dead before the month ends. On the outside, I want to see you smiling. Do it in defiance if you have to. If the end does come, I want this group to meet that end smiling, as the survivor taught us.
Slowly, the members of the former crew nodded. Even Sazed, though his face seemed troubled. Set just shook his head.
"You people are all insane. How I ended up with you, I'll never know."
Breeze laughed.
"Now that's a lie, Set. You know exactly how you ended up joining with us. We threatened to kill you if you didn't."
Elland was looking at Vin. She met his eyes and nodded. It had been a good speech. She wasn't certain if his words would change anything. The crew could never again be the way it had been at the beginning, laughing freely around Clubs's table in the evening hours. However, maybe if they kept Kelsier's smile in mind, they'd be less likely to forget just why it was they kept struggling on.
"All right, people," Elland finally said. "Let's start preparations. Breeze, Sazed, Aurean, I'll need you to talk with the scribes about supply estimates for your trip. Ham, send word to Luthadel and tell Penrod to have our scholars work on culturing plants that can grow in very little sunlight. Demu, pass the word to the men. We march tomorrow."